Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to Africa Link. It's Thursday, April the 12th. I am Zipporah Nyamura.
And I am Abubakar Jallo. We are coming to you live from our studios in Bonn, Germany.
Coming up on the show, an infamous human trafficker believed to be in custody in Italy has been found living in Uganda.
The Italian authorities and also the Swedish authorities don't want to accept that they have made a mistake, that they have arrested the wrong man. The person who is arrested, he was a refugee living in Khartoum.
And the government of Ghana suggests churches and mosques should ditch the megaphones and use instead WhatsApp.
The imam cannot do that one. The imam is not paid mentally. No, any imam is paid. Where will he get the money to be doing that one?
These are just some of the stories we have lined up for you. But first, here's a chance to listen to what has been happening around the world.
I'm Shay Meineke with DW News. German Chancellor Angela Merkel has spoken out against using German military forces in Syria as tensions flare over the alleged use of chemical weapons in the war-torn country. Merkel made her comments at a press conference in Berlin on Thursday.
Germany will not take part in possible military action. I want to make clear again that there are no decisions, but we see and support this, that everything is being done to send a signal that this use of chemical weapons is not acceptable.
The West has blamed Syrian President Bashar al-Assad's forces for using chemical weapons in an attack over the weekend on a rebel-held town near the capital, Damascus. More than 40 people are believed to have been killed in the attack. An international chemical weapons watchdog confirmed on Thursday that a military-grade nerve agent was used on Russian ex-spy Sergei Skripal and his daughter Yulia in England last month. The Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons agreed with UK findings that the nerve agent Novichok was used. Britain and its allies have blamed Russia for the poisoning, accusations Moscow denies. A German aid worker has been kidnapped in Niger near the border with Mali. Local media attributed the kidnapping of the help aid worker to Islamist militants. Help said it was working closely with a German embassy in the West African nation to secure the aid worker's release. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. Local government elections have kicked off in the Gambia. We go to DW correspondent Omar Wali for more.
409 candidates are contesting 120 area council seats across the country. These elections give citizens the opportunity to raise concerns over basic social and development facilities, such as roads, streetlights, garbage disposal, and the management of local resources and services. Ablaye Jane was one of the early voters in the capital, Banjul.
So I've just come to vote in the local government elections. It's been good. It's not as much turnout as I expected, but it's very early in the day, so I'm hoping that more people will come later on in the day today and perform their civic duties as Gambian citizens. The process has been very smooth. It was very easy to find my polling station, to register, and to go in and vote. So the process itself is very smooth, and I encourage others to come and do their own bit for this country.
In its annual report on the death penalty, rights group Amnesty International denounced the rising number of death penalty sentences in Nigeria, noting that more than 600 people were sentenced to death last year. However, Amnesty also recorded an overall drop in the number of countries across sub-Saharan Africa carrying out the death sentences, reporting that only South Sudan and Somalia are known to have carried out executions last year. And finally, Algeria has announced 3 days of mourning following a military plane crash on Wednesday that killed more than 250 people. The crash is believed to be the worst aviation disaster in the North African state's history. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shay Meineke.
You are listening to DW's Africa Link program. I am Zipporah Nyambura.
And I am Abubakar Jallo. We are also live on Facebook, DW Africa. Now let's begin with this fascinating story that rocked the world in 2016.
The suspected head of a huge human trafficking ring between Africa and Europe has been extradited to Italy. Italian prosecutors say his capture is a major breakthrough. We're not talking about a simple organization here, but a structured network.
The infamous human trafficker, Medani Mered, who was allegedly arrested in 2016, has been found. Except that the man the Italian authorities claim to have in custody is not him.
Now, the man being held in Sicily, Italy, is also an Eritrean called Medani Tesfamariam Behere, and is not Medani Mered, who the Italians claim to have in custody. Ali Fagan is the Swedish journalist who found the evidence that Mered is living in Kampala, Uganda. He's been speaking to me about his investigation, which is now in a documentary film.
We met a lot of people who confirmed that some people claimed he's living there, some people claimed that he's not living there, but he spends a lot of time there. We actually didn't meet him. I mean, we got a lot of credible statements from witnesses saying, claiming that he's actually spending time or living in Kampala.
Mered has been described as having a celebrity status in Uganda. Do you think this means that there is little chance that he will be arrested by the Ugandan authorities?
Yes, the description that we also got, that he's some kind of a wild celebrity living a high life there, was spending a lot of money. And of course, he earned a lot of money, and people are afraid that he's paying off police, that he has good contacts with the authorities, that if they would go to the police and claim that he was there, they wouldn't act on the information because they are paid off.
Yeah. So basically, the Italian authorities do not want to admit that they have the wrong man, when even Mered's wife has publicly said that they made a mistake.
Yeah, that's the situation. I mean, the Italian authorities and also the Swedish authorities don't want to accept that they have made a mistake, that they have arrested the wrong man. The person who is arrested, he was a refugee living in Khartoum. He was on his way to Europe.
Why do you think that the Italian authorities would want to hide an information like this?
Well, I don't know, but, you know, this is one of the biggest European police investigations, cooperations. Many, many countries were involved. UK, Germany, Sweden, Holland, Italy. I mean...
So as a result of that, they just don't want to admit the fact that they bungled this?
Yeah, exactly. How could they say that, sorry, guys, we made a mistake. This man is innocent. We have to let him go. I mean, how would that look? This was like when they claimed they got Mered, they presented it as the arrest of the year. It was told that it was a triumph in the fight against human trafficking. This was Europe's answer to, you know, all the people dying in the Mediterranean. And now they just made a mistake, got the wrong guy, got an innocent guy. How can they say that?
Ali Fagan, a Swedish journalist, speaking to me earlier from Stockholm in Sweden.
And Abu, we have one quick comment here from Sereko Lawrence, who says some whistleblowers claim that he's protected by state corrupt agents, changed his names, has a Ugandan passport in different names. Everything can happen if you have money. So
Indeed.
Those are just some of the comments. Keep writing.
Thank you for that.
Yeah.
And now we move on. The number of death penalties in sub-Saharan Africa has drastically been reduced in the last year, according to a new report by Amnesty International. There were only 178 cases of executions compared to at least 1,000 in 2016. In Africa, only Sudan and Somalia carried out the death penalty.
Now, Kenya recently abolished death penalty for murder cases. Amnesty International, however, believes it is high time it considered doing away with the practice altogether, since there have been no executions in the last 30 years. The organization's advisor, Oluwatosin Popola, explains what this means.
I think that's the realization on the part of the executive that they do not want the death penalty, although they've not moved to abolishing it or taking steps to abolishing it for all crimes. But I think the courts have done that now. They've stepped in. And we also have to note that, you know, contrary to media reports, the judgment actually focused on murder alone rather than armed robbery. So, you know, mandatory death penalty continues to exist for armed robbery in Kenya. But generally, there is progress. The progress is slow, but there is progress. And I think, as time goes on, the authorities in the country will realize that the death penalty is not the way forward. And Amnesty has consistently called on the authorities in Kenya to establish an official moratorium on execution and now take the big step of abolishing the death penalty for all crimes, like 20 other sub-Saharan African countries have done in the last 40 years.
Those who advocate for this also say, for example, in Kenya, say the prisons are already so full. And what will be the effect of this on prisons?
Carrying out execution is not a solution to the congesting prisons or the congesting death roll. And I think one good solution to the congesting death roll is by granting commutations. Kenya has set a good example on that point. As I mentioned earlier, twice, it has actually granted commutations to everyone on death roll at the time of commutation. And also by granting pardons, that could also reduce death roll population.
Generally speaking, what has led to the drop of death penalty cases in Africa?
More and more countries in that region are beginning to realize that the death penalty is not the way forward. It's not a solution to crime. There is a general attitude towards not wanting to carry out executions in the sub-region. Apart from the usual suspects, Somalia, South Sudan, Botswana, and Sudan, majority of the retentionist countries, although continue to impose death sentences, they hardly carry them out.
Oluwatosin Popola, Amnesty International's advisor on the death penalty.
Now a quick response here from Michael Adu says some crimes can only be paid for with life.
And Max Aveli Odum says, good, what about Django justice penalty?
Thank you for those responses. And just so you know, these are not our opinions, but the opinions of the listeners. Anyways, noise pollution is a major problem for many cities across Africa. The situation is exacerbated by loudspeakers and megaphones in churches and mosques. In Ghana, officials there are now finding new ways to deal with noise pollution.
The authorities have suggested to mosques and churches to start using instead text messages or even better, WhatsApp, to call their members to prayers. As our correspondent in Accra, Isaac Kalechi, reports, not many people think it's a good idea.
Sounds like that are familiar in Fadama, central of the capital city, Accra. It's a usual practice in communities where Muslims reside. Like the churches, mosques in Ghana have been accused of making excessive noise. That's why Ghana's minister in charge of environment, Professor Frimpong Boateng, is calling for mosques to use text messages or social media application WhatsApp to call faithful for prayers.
From the mosque, why is it that time for prayer cannot be transmitted with text message or WhatsApp? So the imam will send WhatsApp messages to everybody, it's time for worship up here. And I think that will help to reduce the noise. But this may be controversial, but it's something that we can think about.
Sheikh Usman Ahmed is an imam at a local mosque in the Fadama community. He calls Muslims to prayer several times daily. Though he agrees the noise level should be reduced, he says text messages and WhatsApp have economical implications.
The imam cannot do that. The imam is not paid mentally. No, any imam is paid. Where will he get the money to be doing that one? Are you getting me? So what is not possible, we don't have to say we want to practice it. We try to practice what is possible.
Most of the Ghanaians I talked to have got a clear stand on this.
I don't find anything wrong with Muslims waking up at dawn and using their megaphone to call their people to come worship their God, because we have Christian churches who use megaphones as well, and they also preach out at dawn. How many of their members use phones?
The minister's statement shouldn't be accepted, because not everyone is on social media. And not everyone is illiterate as he is.
Voices of Ghanaians expressing their views on that topic. That report was compiled by Isaac Kalechi.
Now a response here from Enoch Deku, who says the point here is, are these religious groups aware that noise making is part of environmental pollution?
And Izuuti actually says, supported, noise in Accra can be unbearable sometimes.
And Fred King wrote a quick one. Fred King, so one of the best ideas ever, Africans do too much when it's come to serving God. They do more than what is required. Thanks for your responses. If you are just joining this program, this is Africa Link, and my name is Abubakar Jallo.
And I am Zipporah Nyambura. Africa Link is also live on Facebook. Thank you to all those who are writing us messages. Ishmael Koroma, we are getting your messages. Solo Solo, keep listening.
Indeed. Coming up in this half of Africa Link, as the ban on smoking shisha looms in Ghana, some shisha smokers tell the government it's their habit, so their problems.
It's just like smoking weed. It's not legalized, but they hide to take weed. I don't understand the reason why some people should be much particular about other people. At the end of the day, I'm the one who's going to die.
And Uganda's statistics office reports that gender violence has reduced drastically, but fairly a large amount of husbands still think it's a good idea to beat their wives.
A real man never beats a woman. We'll listen to this woman, we'll know why she is behaving that way. There is always an alternative to beating, and that is dialogue.
But before we get to that story, artists all around the world often struggle to gain recognition and make ends meet. Africa is no exception, so a group of West African artists now want to take arts to the people by creating museums on wheels.
As the name goes, they ride through towns on a bus, bringing art closer to the people. It features artists from six Western African countries, making a 10,000-kilometer journey through seven countries. Adrian Krish witnessed the journey kick off, and here is his report read by Eunice Wanjiro.
Artists drawn from Ghana, Nigeria, Ivory Coast, Germany, and Senegal are getting ready to start their journey across West Africa. Apart from taking arts to the people, it is an adventure that will offer them a chance to exchange ideas. Nigerian-born artist Emeka Udemba is the pioneer and one of the participants. He looks at the yellow Mercedes school bus, which will be his new home for the next 6 weeks, and is annoyed because they should have long been rolling out of Lagos, Nigeria's biggest city. But the bus's right tail light was missing its cover.
To fix it, or you create problems for yourself, you know.
This does not deter them from their aim, which is to reach and attend the African Contemporary Art Fair, Dakar, in Senegal, held every 2 years. Udemba says a museum on the wheels is worth the trouble.
Everybody needs culture. Everybody needs stimulation, kind of. So it's not just for the rich or good area. So the idea of museum of today is not just to store stuff. It's a place to discuss. It's a space for artists to experiment on new ideas. You know, it could be turned, it's just like a meeting point for people of all strands of society.
The artists plan to meet with people from all sorts of backgrounds and cultures. The idea is that these experiences will feed into art created on the tour. These works will then be exhibited on the return trip at cultural centers in Senegal, Guinea, Ivory Coast, Ghana, Togo, and Nigeria. The diverse mix of artists on the bus is also deliberate, as German photographer Gabriel Goller explains.
There will be a crazy exchange. There are different artists who all do different things. Sculptors, painters, artists who work more digitally, photographers like me. That's a nice mix. Something very creative will come out of this.
The trip has an important mission, says Friederike Möschel, the director of Germany's Goethe Institute in Lagos, which is supporting the tour called Stretch Terrains for the second time.
Es geht eigentlich darum, die westafrikanischen Künstler untereinander zu.
It's really about connecting West African artists with each other. Unfortunately, there's not enough exchange between them. On the one hand, this is because of language barriers between the English-speaking and French-speaking parts of West Africa. But there are also logistical problems, bad air connections and visa problems.
Afrikanischen Ländern wirklich sehr kompliziert ist.
The group's first destination is the infamous border crossing with Benin. They hope to be on time for the art fair in Senegal on the 3rd of May.
That report was compiled by Adrian Krish.
And let me give you one response here from Abba Aminu. He says, we lack basic necessities of life, such as feeding, transportation, education, and many more. That's why it's hard for us to spend our time and money on art. A really good one.
Yeah, for sure.
Use on.
Hot coal, a water pipe with occasional bubbles and thick white smoke, and maybe some music to set the mood right. That's a typical description of a shisha bar. But did you know that one session of smoking shisha is equivalent to puffing at least 100 cigarettes?
That's reason enough for a country like Ghana to want to join Kenya, Tanzania and Rwanda in banning shisha. But as Maxwell Souk reports from Tamale in northern Ghana, not everyone is happy about the possible impact of a shisha ban.
It is hot afternoon in Tamale, and a group of young men are resting under a cluster of mango trees at Sanarigo, one of the neighborhoods in this northern town. But they are not just avoiding the sun. The trees also provide a perfect shade for groups of people who have become addicted to smoking shisha, as 26-year-old Hussein tells me.
I am the second in command. The guys, you know, so I am second in command in shisha.
The guys meet regularly to smoke. I watch them pull on their pipes and blow out thick clouds of vapor with passion. Hussein tells me what attracted him most to shisha.
When you pull, the vapor will come out more than cigarettes, you understand? So more times, it's the vapor who normally like attract us to smoke the shisha, yeah. The way it is coming out, you say, hey, you feel like smoking more.
There is a tacit acceptance of shisha smoking in Tamale, and there are joints springing up all over the city. Whilst most people are smoking tobacco in their pipes, some are also adding marijuana or other drugs. The Ghana Health Services estimates that there has been a rise in the number of people smoking shisha. In fact, they think that 5.3% more people smoke shisha than traditional cigarettes. That is why the authorities have decided to ban shisha smoking as of June this year. But Hussein insists that there is no problem with smoking shisha and it shouldn't be seen as illegal.
No, shisha is just normal. It's just normal. It doesn't give any high or let you feel dizzy or something. You only feel the flavored scent and that's all, yeah.
But Dr. Abdallah Yahya, a consultant physician at the Tamale Teaching Hospital, believes smoking shisha is very dangerous.
I'm telling it here, take it or not, that it is medically unfair to your body, to your brain, to your heart, to your liver, to your kidney.
The World Health Organization says smoke from just one water pipe of shisha is equal to smoking 100 sticks of cigarettes. Despite this health warning, shisha lovers like Ismail say they will do anything to keep on smoking their beloved shisha.
It's just like smoking weed. It's not legalized, but they hide to take weed. So I don't just know. Sometimes I don't understand the reason why some people should be much particular about other people. At the end of the day, I'm the one who's going to die.
As the ban approaches, people are already skeptical that a government law will really affect the underground practice. They worry that the popular trade will just be driven further into the shadows, and this could be even more problematic for society.
Maxwell Souk reporting from Ghana.
And Ikena Adik, who says ban shisha and legalize the natural herb of life.
Well, Abu, what is this natural herb of life, for those who don't know?
It's definitely weed there for sure.
Okay, that's controversial. Then I will read the next comment here from Torisk, who says, shisha is dangerous to a drug to human and is more powerful than cigarette, so we must stay away from smoking.
And Charles Viper says, it's causing severe throat cancer. I think it's good for them to ban it. Most of the youth are abusing it. Thanks for all your responses.
Speaking out.
Now, the multi-sectoral approach to gender-based violence in Uganda is gaining momentum with a campaign by the government to empower various actors such as civil society organizations and faith-based institutions to promote zero tolerance against domestic battering in all forms.
The latest report by the Uganda Bureau of Statistics found that 49% of women and 40% of men in the country agree to wife beating in certain cases, such as neglect of children. These figures may seem high, but in fact, they are lower than in previous years and are an indication that things are changing. Frank Iga has this report.
I traveled to Bukoyo village in the east of Uganda, where the campaign against domestic violence is being taken seriously. Village chairman Haji Musa told me they have set up a committee to deal with the cases of violence within families.
We are handling domestic violence cases appropriately by counseling men in this village, by telling them beating is not correct and must stop. So far in our village, it's rare to find culprits unless one is mentally unstable.
Agnes Siasa is a school teacher in Kawempe Town, a Kampala city suburb. She condemns violence at all levels and says there is no justification for wife beating.
A real man never beats a woman. As adults, you should sit down and solve issues amicably. There is always an alternative to beating, and that is dialogue.
But not all women agree. Teddy Adokorach is a housewife in Lugazi Town. She told me that not all beating is bad.
I would love my husband to beat me, first of all, if I denied him sex. Because if he takes it for granted, today I deny you sex, tomorrow I also deny you sex, and you know, are you having sex outside or am I not appealing anymore? So we have this belief that once in a while, your husband should at least hit you. That shows that he's concerned about you and notices whatever mistakes you do.
I spoke to Caro Idimbe of the Interreligious Council, a faith-based organization partnering with the government to eliminate violence in homes.
We decided as an institution to first of all empower our religious leaders with knowledge on the legal framework of Uganda, because we know that we have the Domestic Violence Act. But on the other hand, we use the Quran and the Bible, because we know that these holy books have scripture that prevent battering women, battering children, but even women battering men.
Peter Okello is the father of five children and a lecturer at Chamago University. He says when there is battering in a home, the children usually emulate their parents' bad habits.
If you go down and you beat your wife when the kids are watching, the kids will also grow up with that mentality, knowing that beating their wives or beating the opposite sex is something very normal. So it is something that psychologically can break up a family. It's something that can actually destroy the future of your young ones as they grow up.
Maggie Chomukama of the Minister of Gender told me the government is taking the issue very seriously.
Condemn all forms of gender-based violence. We have a very supportive policy and legal framework put in by government, which the ministry has spearheaded. We now have a national policy and action plan on the elimination of gender-based violence, and we specifically put the word elimination in the title to show that there should be zero tolerance under any circumstance.
Frank Higa with that report from Kampala, a really interesting one.
Yeah, and Abu, as you'd expect, the comments are hilarious and some very sad. But Tejan Kalon says, a man that always beats his wife is the weakest man on earth. It is better to talk or admonish her than to beat her, which is quite a good.
I do support that one. And we have Baye Jeremiah, who says, that's a crazy decision ever. Beating for whatever reason is domestic violence against women.
And Wikezi Oya says, I think beating is violence. It is against humanity. It is an embarrassment of humanity and unacceptable.
And Kagwa Andrew says, I come from Uganda. Wife beating is highly condoned, and the government has strongly supported and empowered women to stand up against it. Yes, we may have a few pockets here and there. Domestic violence is everywhere, even in Europe and America. But this is an exaggerated figure without a credible source. Well, that's a good one there. Anyways, before we go, a quick reminder that you can find Africa Link as well as a podcast in your podcast app. If you have the application on your smartphone, just search for Africa Link there. You would always get us there, or you find us there on Facebook. That's DW Africa.
Yeah, for sure. Don't miss that out.
It's definitely interesting. It's been a pleasure having you aboard. My name is Abubakar Jalo.
And I'm Zipora Nyambura.
Until next time. Bye now.